This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Surprise! It's not Carlin, although it is Carlin's show. Anita Marks in for Carlin tonight here on 98.7 ESPN. And we welcome you in with you for the next 3 hours. Brian and Jake are producing the show back in New York City. I'm coming to you live from my home studio. We're going to rock and roll the next 3 hours. We're going to get to a lot. We're going to dive into a lot. I've booked some nice guests for us, you, me, us tonight on the program. Tyler Fulgham, and I just got off of ESPN2. I was doing Daily Wager, and Tyler Fulgham is my partner in crime when it comes to ESPN Daily Wager, and he's going to jump on board. We've got basketball, NBA back in action tonight. And as always, if you do listen to my programs, I'm all about trying to help people win some money. So I've got a great play. At least I think it's a great play. Hopefully it's a great play. I mean, I put some money down on it in the Wizards Grizzlies game tonight. But also you've got the Spurs and the Mavs. So two NBA games back in action tonight after, of course, as we like to call it, the mid-season break, a.k.a. the All-Star break, All-Star Sunday. And so Tyler Fulgham will join us and we'll have some NBA picks. I also want to dive into some of the futures picks out there. I talked about this on my weekend show. I'm all about the Nets. And I'm not going out on a ledge or anything like that. I just, you know, although there's a number of people who still believe that the Lakers are going to win this damn thing. Okay, that's fine. I think there are a number of reasons why I really like the Nets and the futures bets out there that you can wager that they win the championship. You can still get plus money that they win the Eastern Conference. Of course, you've got to worry about the 76ers. But I also like James Harden, believe it or not, to win the MVP. And I want to say on Friday night when I host the Weekend Wager show here on 98.7 ESPN gambling show every Friday night, 10 to midnight. Brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Brian, you produced that show with me. I want to say when we did the show on Friday, I want to say Harden to win the MVP was 33-1. It's now dropped down to 18-1.
Wow.
So we were telling folks to jump on it on Friday night at 33-1. It's now jumped down to 18-1. Just FYI. So, and listen, it's a long shot, right? Like Embiid now has leapfrogged over LeBron James in the odds to win the MVP, not by much. Embiid 2-1, LeBron James plus 250. Okay, you know what? We're splitting hairs here, so it's not a lot. So why not? excuse me. Why not go for a long shot, and go for a long shot that for a dude who's just like leading the NBA in assists, averaging 25 points a game. And once KD gets back, I mean, I think it's not even going to be fair. It's just not even going to be fair. Another bet, if you recall, Brian, that we told people to jump on weeks ago was the Knicks to make it to the postseason.
Yes.
Now, I remember that one. Remember that? But at that point in time, they were sitting at 7. If the season had ended then, I want to say this was like two weeks ago. If the season had ended then, the Knicks would have gotten into the postseason. And at that point in time, the odds for them to make it into the postseason at that point was plus 210. Plus 210. And yeah, there was talk and speculation, you know, how aggressive. And we still don't know, right? Trade deadline, what is it, March 25th, something like that? You know, how aggressive, how active and attractive are the Knicks going to be to try to go after and get Bradley Beal? Are they going to give up the farm for him? If they do go out and get him, then, you know, will they still be playing as excellent defense as they have been playing? I want to say their defensive efficiency right now, I think they're fourth in the NBA in defensive efficiency. So, you know, plus 210. Was great odds. Now it's minus 110. Knicks right now are sitting fifth. So they've now moved up two spots. If the season was to end today, they would enter into the postseason as the fifth seed. And so now those odds are minus 110. So just a few things that I'm going to tee up for Tyler Fulgham, again, my partner in crime on Daily Wager that you can watch every Monday through Friday from 6 to 7. Shameless plug, not so shameless. And Cynthia Freeland, who typically is one of my dearest friends, and she joins me on the show whenever I request it. Why? This is a big week. And again, if you listen to me on the weekend, I told you that this was going to be a big week. The salary cap number came out today, and it's 182.5. We were anticipating it to be at 180, 2.5. Okay, hey, nothing wrong with that. A little bit higher than we expected. Is it going to make a difference? Maybe for, you know, a fifth string wide receiver, it'll make a difference. But anyway, 180, 182.5. That is the salary cap number we're at right now. And as I said, again, on my weekend shows, not sure how many people listening tonight that listen to me on the weekend. I do appreciate it. You know, this year in the NBA are going to be the haves and the have-nots. This is going to be a very unique year. And I had David Cantor, again, a very dear friend of mine, NFL agent. Maybe I'm a little biased. I think one of the best in the business, who was on with me over the weekend as well. And you're going to see a lot of NFL players take one-year deals. A few things that are going on here, right? Number one, cap space is down $100 million. Marinating that for a minute. The NFL cap space was supposed to be 280 this year. Teams worked out deals, worked out contracts with a number of players anticipating the cap to be at 280. So, you know, teams that, I mean, let's be honest. Who in their right mind could have predicted a pandemic, right? Who in their right mind could have predicted what we've all experienced the past year, right? So I'm not sitting here saying that, oh, you know, there were a few teams that played this wisely. Nobody knew. It's just some teams were in a very good situation prior to us experience a pandemic where their goal was to rebuild. And, you know, do you rebuild in the NFL? Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not like teams do a fire sale, although you can argue the Jets definitely did that last year, right? But it's teams that are looking forward to the future. And those teams, they stepped in poop. I'd say it a different way, but it's a family show. And they are now coming into 2021 as the haves, because now they've got a ton of cap space available. And the Jets fans, listen, you're it. If the Johnson family says, all right, Joe, go spend that money, boy, watch out. Jets could be very competitive in this division, even though I still love my Buffalo Bills. And I call them my Buffalo Bills because I love Josh Allen. And I picked them to win the Super Bowl this year. Obviously, they didn't even make it there. But nonetheless, I still think Bills are the team to beat in this division. Now, there's a chance that Deshaun Watson gets traded to the Miami Dolphins. Watch out. You know, now what happens with this division? Make it fun, for sure. But the Jacksonville Jaguars have the most cap space of any team. And then after that, it's the Colts. And I talked about the Colts tonight on Daily Wager. At 106, that's what the odds are. You're laying $106 to win $100. At 106, to win their division, I think is a lock. Even though Jacksonville is going to have a ton of money, they're going to go out and get Galladay for their expected rookie quarterback in Trevor Lawrence, possibly. What do I mean by the haves and the have-nots? Teams are having to shed players. Like the Steelers are going to have to let go of Juju Smith-Schuster. There are teams, you know, the Bucs are trying to run it back. What did they do? They tagged Chris Godwin. They're going to have to work out a deal with Chris Godwin. They can't afford a tag number on him, but they tagged him to try to work out a deal. So there are teams that are going to have to be really creative. There's players that are going to have to give hometown discounts if they want to stay with an organization that they feel they have an opportunity to win, because we all put a dollar amount, a price on winning and playing for a winning organization. And then there's other teams out there, there's other players and other agents and other that are, they're all about the money, and they're going to go to the team that's going to offer them the most money. And so based on the top three teams that are head and shoulders above everyone else when it comes to cap space is Jacksonville, the Jets, and the Colts. And out of those three teams, who's in a prime position to win right now and to compete in their division? For me, it's the Colts. I'm a believer in Carson Wentz. I think his issues had to do with the city, not the guy. He reconnects with his former offensive coordinator, Frank Wright. They have a plethora of talent. They've got a ton of money. They've got a solid number of draft picks. They're drafting 21st. They need an edge rusher. I think an edge rusher could fall to them at 21. They can sign both Galladay as well as Jadeveon Clowney if they wanted to. And then, $20 million lower is the Patriots. And the Patriots just traded for Trent Brown, offensive lineman. Don't sleep on the Patriots. The NFC East very well could be one of the most competitive divisions, depending. What if? So here's the Jets having to decide what they're going to do with Sam Darnold. Are they going to keep him? Are they going to draft Zach Wilson? Are they going to trade him? They're sitting pretty in regard to cap space. They've got a ton of draft capital. The Miami Dolphins are hoping that maybe they could make a trade for Deshaun Watson. Who knows if that happens? Watch out. The Patriots are hoping that they get Jimmy Garoppolo. They're bolstering their offensive line. And then of course, you have the Buffalo Bills. And they're in a good position as well, by the way, when it comes to cap space. They're kind of middle of the road. It could be a really, really fun division. So Cynthia Freeland is going to join us at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We're going to talk about all the latest news. And Patty Traina is going to join us at 8:30. As soon as we got the news that Zeitler was cut from the Giants, I called her immediately because nobody knows salary cap and how to finagle it and what to do with it better than Patty. So Patty is going to be joining us at 8:30. That's appointment radio. Giants fans are not. You want a lesson tonight? You want to learn something about salary cap? That's appointment radio. And then, of course, we've got the quote-unquote fifth major that tees off tomorrow morning at 6:30 a.m. John Mascari is going to join me. He's the head pro at Alpine Country Club, and he's my co-host for our golf show, which we're excited is going to be back here on 98.7 ESPN on Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. called On the Tee. So he's going to pop on with us in the last hour around 10 o'clock. We'll talk some players championship, hopefully get you some winners. So, and of course, I buried the lead. I left the best part out, and that's you, our listeners. 800-919-3776 is the phone number. That's how you get on board. When we get back, some calls you want to jump on, your thoughts on, of course, Zeitler getting cut from the Giants again. Just trying to finagle that cap space, right? So right now, apparently, the Giants are their cap space right now is $3 million. So at least they're not under the cap anymore. They're $3 million over. But just to give you a comparison, you got the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're like $78 million. It's really ridiculous. Joining me now is my partner in crime on Daily Wager, Monday through Friday, 6 to 7. Shameless plug, not so shameless, Tiger Fulham. Fulham joins us now here on 98.7 ESPN. Tyler, good evening.
Hello, Anita. How are we doing?
I'm great. Weather's changing here. I can just smell the golf course. I know you've been teeing it up every week out there in Las Vegas. I'm jelly, but it's okay. It's all right. I'll soon be on the links myself. But I'm thrilled that you're joining us on the show. I'm in for Chris Carlin tonight. And NBA is back. Before we get into the games tonight, just out of curiosity, you heard Jay Williams. He does not anticipate the Knicks to make it to the postseason. I respectfully disagree. Them at plus 210 like 3 weeks ago. I'm curious. Do you agree with Jay Will? Do you feel that the Knicks will not, or do you feel that they will make it to the postseason, Tyler?
I, like you, respectfully disagree with Jay Will. Right now, the Knicks are a game above 500. They're the fifth spot in the Eastern Conference. They certainly are exceeding expectation, but they have a positive point differential this year. And Tom Thibodeau has brought credibility to this franchise that has desperately needed it. They seem to have found at least one star piece. They need to add a Julius Randle, but he's having an awesome year. And they have something you can hang your hat on that will travel with them the rest of the season. Defense, as they say in sports, defense travels. It is something that doesn't take nights off. Sometimes your shot may not be falling. That comes and goes in basketball. But if you play good defense, and the Knicks have the second best defensive rating in the NBA behind only the Los Angeles Lakers, that's something that I think we can tangibly bank on. And last check I had, you mentioned the numbers come way down, but a while ago it was plus 210 for them to make the playoffs. I think it's plus 106 at DraftKings or Caesars William Hill, wherever I last checked that. And I'm all in on the Knicks. I think they're going to stay inside that top 6-7 in the Eastern Conference and qualify for the postseason.
I love it. I'm with you as well. And that leads us to the other New York team, even though they're not in Manhattan, they're in Brooklyn. That is the Nets. I like them to win the Eastern Conference. You get that at plus money again. I think right now it's like at plus 130, something like that. And then for them to win the championship is 3-1. Listen, they are killing people without KD. Here's the thing, Tyler. Like, I just don't think it's going to be fair once KD gets back. I just don't think it's going to be fair. And everyone's saying, oh, what are they going to do defensively? This team, if they want to play defense, they can. Defense is all about heart. It's all about heart. It's all about grit. It's wanting to play. Once they get into the postseason, they're going to want to play it. They go up, let's say, hypothetically speaking, they go up against the Lakers and LeBron and AD. They're going to want to play it. So I'm not so worried about a defense, and love the addition of Blake Griffin. So Nets 3-1 to win the championship. Are you about it?
I actually like more so just for the price and the value in the Eastern Conference, the Philadelphia 76ers. I think now with everybody migrating and flooding money in the market on the Brooklyn Nets for good reason, they're legit. They seemingly are only going to get more legit when KD comes back. And if Blake Griffin, who, by the way, didn't have a single dunk this year with the Detroit Pistons.
I know. There's isn't that unbelievable?
I think Blake, kind of observing him for his career, we know he loved being in L.A., being in that big market. He shipped off to Detroit and just kind of wasting away in exile there. I wonder if he was playing a little possum. I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see Blake Griffin in a Nets jersey. There's a steal at half court, and Kyrie has the ball, and it's just him and Blake, a 2-on-0. Kyrie throws a lob off the backboard, and Blake, like it's 2012 in a Clippers uniform, jumps up, catches it off glass, and windmills it home. So I just have a feeling Blake may have been hiding some of the athleticism. He's not the same Blake, but I still think he can dunk at 6'9" and being the athlete he once was despite the injuries. And now that he'll be re-energized in Brooklyn, don't be surprised at all if Twitter starts blowing up the first time Blake throws a lob from Kyrie Irving home. I go, where was that in Detroit? I wonder if Blake was giving it his all in Detroit. I digress there. My point is
really quick. I just want to share this. I just want to share this because you make such an excellent point. And I don't know if our listeners, if they know this, 150 shots Blake Griffin has taken this season, and not one was a dunk. I just want to talk, like, marinating that for a minute as we hear Tyler continue. But 150 shots, and not one a dunk.
He's 9 inches tall. He's may have waned a little, but he's still 6'9" tall, so something's fishy about that. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Not one single dunk.
I hear
someone
you.
Like Blake Griffin, I have to imagine I'm taking the over on half a dunk wearing a Nets uniform the rest of the season. I don't know if I can find that anywhere out here in Vegas, but I'll look and I'll gladly bet the house or bet the farm on the over half a dunk. But back to the Eastern Conference. I see the Sixers as the only legitimate threat to the Nets. We know the Bucks and the issues they've had in the postseason. The Raptors are a shell of the team they once were. I don't know if the Heat are the same team we saw in the bubble, although they are improving defensively. The reason I say the Sixers are the only threat because they have the personnel to defensively make life as difficult as you possibly can for a team that has James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and now Blake Griffin. Joel Embiid is a defensive player of the year anchor in the middle of the paint. So having Kyrie and James Harden trying to drive at that and be efficient with their buckets, that goes down. On the perimeter, Ben Simmons is as good as any perimeter defender we have in the NBA with his length, strength, and athleticism at 6'10". he is someone who no one stops KD, but Ben Simmons can make it as difficult for KD to get buckets as anyone in the NBA. They also have guys now who fit roles on that team. Seth Curry can knock down open threes, and Embiid's become a more willing passer out of the post. Tobias Harris is that nice secondary scorer who, if Joel Embiid's being double teamed, you can kick it to Tobias on the wing, and he can make something happen one-on-one in ISO. They also have other defensive specialists like Dwight Howard behind Joel Embiid, Matisse Thybulle on the wing alongside Ben Simmons. Danny Green is the quintessential championship glue guy with his 3-and-D game. So I actually like now the price and value on the Sixers more so than the Nets, because they've become so popular, because I do look at the Sixers as the only team that has that kind of personnel and scheme that can make life difficult in a 7-game series for the Nets.
Again, Tyler Fulgham is joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, and you could see him and me on Daily Wager. It's a fun show, and I have so much fun on that show, Tyler.
It really is. Your shirts that you bring every day. By the way, my mom, shout out to Mama Fulgham. She loves Anita Marks. She loves the energy you bring. She loves having that female perspective on the show as well, and she loves the shirts that you have every day. She tunes in as much for that as she does to watch her own son.
Oh, that's so sweet. That's so sweet. My mom, whenever my mom sees me on the show, she's so critical. Like, you know, dye the roots. Why aren't your nails done? Well, it's a pandemic, Mom. I haven't gotten a mani-pedi in a year. Like, deal with it. Like, what do you mean, why are my nails done? Like my mom is so critical. That, like, what shirt are you wearing? Stop wearing black.
Do you have brothers or sisters?
What did you say?
Do you have brothers or sisters?
So I have a younger brother and sister, same father, different mother. So they're half brother and sister. My brother is 16 years younger than me. My sister is 27 years younger than me. And they both.
I have kind of like a blended family. I'm the first boy my mom had. My four older half sisters. I'm like, I was just saying, your mom's, you know, why are you wearing the shirt? Why are your pedicure done? Like. I'm the favorite child because I was the mom's firstborn son. So I get all kinds of grief from my siblings because mom is much easier on me, likes me a lot more than everyone else. And the rest of the family will admit it. So I didn't know if you were like the oldest and you kind of get the brunt of mom's criticism.
I'm the only for her. But she rips me to shreds every time she sees me on. Hey, but we don't have that much time, and I want to break down. NBA is back tonight. Very exciting. Here's the thing. Like, so I just started handicapping NBA, Tyler. I was like, NBA, no, not for me. You know me, I'm football and golf. And, you know, Eddie Marlette, who's our producer on Daily Wager, was like, come on, Anita, you can do it. And I was like, all right, I'll try. Now I'm hooked. I'm hooked, dude. Yeah. So last few nights we haven't had NBA. I'm like, oh, you know, I couldn't wait to get my prop bets in tonight, my DFS lineups. I'm in, man. I am in. Let's start with the Wizards and the Grizzlies. Of course, and folks that did not watch Daily Wager, I'm all in on Morant. Last time he played the Grizzlies played the Wizards. Last time he faced the Wizards, he went 35 points, 10 rebounds. Right now, the over in points and rebounds combined is 32.5. I love that prop bet, so I'm going over. That's my play in this game. What play do you have in this game, Tyler?
I like that as well. The way I'm looking at this game from a macro perspective is, I think that we're going to – 237 was the last check I had on the total. It's a bit high, even though this is a fast-paced Wizards team. They're playing much better, more focused defensively because they've gotten back into the thick of the playoff race in the Eastern Conference behind Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. So I'm going to play the under. I think it's just a tick too high. I like the Wizards side. They're plus 3.5. Would even sprinkle a little on the money line as an underdog. I think they're live. As far as player props, I love where you're going with Ja Morant. We know that's an exploitable matchup for guards against Washington. Guards usually eat. You saw that with Ja last time. I think Russell Westbrook, pardon me, over 10.5 assists. That's something he's done in 7 of his last 11 games. And then the last time he played the Wizards played Memphis, pardon me, despite the fact that Westbrook and the Wizards lost, he had 15 dimes in that game. So 10.5 seems a little bit too low for a guy who's basically averaging 11 this season. So that's the way I'm looking at this game. I do think Brad Beal's point prop may be a little too high as well. I think it was 33.5 for the NBA's leading
scorer. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm on the under there, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a good people may not know it, but this Memphis team is good defensively, and they're pretty much whole and healthy for the first time all year.
All right, and before I let you go, you got the Spurs and the Mavs. Luka, love him, playing him. He is the common denominator in all my DFS lineups. What bets do you have on this matchup?
Yeah, I like the over in this matchup. I think it was down at 226.5, 227. We just got word that LaMarcus Aldridge and the Spurs are mutually agreeing to part ways, so he's not going to be on the court tonight. His time with the Spurs is done. Looks like he's entering the buyout market. So Keldon Johnson's a guy who I think from a daily fantasy perspective now provides some better value. I think he's only $5,100 on DraftKings, and he'll fill a lot of those minutes that are going to be vacated by LaMarcus Aldridge. I like the Luka Doncic over 2.5 3-point made field goals in this matchup. He has had at least 3 triples in each of his last 7 games before the break. He was averaging 9 attempts in those 7 games. And for a guy who shoots 36%, the simple math says that's 3 makes per game, as long as he keeps up that pace of attempts. So I do think Luka has a big day. I am isolating his 3-point made prop at 2.5. I'm going to go over that because I think it's a little bit too low. There's a little bit of an edge there.
Tyler, you rock. I appreciate your time this evening. Thank you so much, my friend. I'm not on Wager for the rest of the week. So, continue to crush it. Continue to have great shows, and I'm sure I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
You got it. You got it. Tyler Fulgham. Make sure you follow him on all things social media. And I'm not just saying this because I'm a part of the show, but make sure you watch Daily Wager again Monday through Friday on ESPN2 from 6 to 7 p.m. Cynthia Freeland joins us all the way from the left coast. Cynthia, what is up, man? This is your walk-in music.
I know. I love my walk-in music. It makes me happy every time I do a little dance. You can't see it, but I'm dancing.
I believe it. All right, let's dive into it. Let's start with Dak Prescott, right? Cowboys, 4-year, $160 million deal, 66 signing bonus, $95 million guaranteed. I just think it's dumb. Listen, with all the respect to Dak, you don't play good players, great money. Now, you could say, well, wait a minute, it's a quarterback. You know, I mean, there's very, very few far between excellent, great. Sometimes you've got to pay good quarterbacks great money because they're a diamond, you know, they're very few and far between. But, you know, I've got some other concerns in regard to what are they going to do on the offensive line? What are they going to do? Amari Cooper gone? Ezekiel Elliott gone? How's Dak Prescott going to win football games for them without talent around him or without a stellar offensive line? I'm not down with this. I'm curious where you stand with this deal.
The interesting part about the Cowboys is that, you know, people want to play there. I mean, Dallas, they win a lot, and also there's no state income tax, which is very favorable. I mean, New Yorkers, you can tell me something about that. I'm in California. It's highway robbery out here.
No, so ultimately, you have no idea.
What happens is, I do. Cali is pretty much crazy. So at the end of the day, what the players do is they're amenable to restructuring their contracts. So the Cowboys, because players want to play there, they're very open to structuring and restructuring and signing. You see all these people, you know, we've seen it today. We saw a lot of Saints players restructure their contracts. We saw it happen for the Carolina Panthers players as well. Christian McCaffrey, he restructured his. So while I would say that it sounds like a crazy monstrous deal on the outset, and it is, I would imagine we'll keep hearing things about restructuring and shifting things from one season to the other with the cap presumably going back up. There's a lot of ways to play, you know, accounting tricks, if you will. So while it may seem crazy and it does seem like a huge deal and Dak, you know, bet on himself and it's great, I do think it's like we got to be careful because we don't know exactly the truth, right? The agent wants to say, agents are incentivized to say how big the contract is. The Cowboys, they don't need to say anything. They don't care. And if players are willing to keep restructuring, then it kind of is no harm, no foul. But again, I'm not saying that, you know, this is what I would have done had I been them, but I do think that it's not quite as crazy as it sounds.
You know, here's another thing. I don't hear a lot of people talking about the ankle. I mean, and this was a pretty significant ankle injury, you know, and part of Dak's repertoire is his scrambling ability. So, you know, that's another thing. And you know, I don't anticipate their offensive line to be as good as it's been in the past 3 years. I just have some huge red flags here when it comes to this deal, when it comes to the situation. And I totally understand what you're saying. No sales tax. People want to play in Dallas. But I'm looking at this division, and the Giants, they just cut Zeitler, an offensive lineman, today. Not sure what Solder is going to do. They've got some salary cap issues. The Eagles, I mean, they're negative $26 million. And you know, based on the reports that we've been hearing the last 2 weeks, they got more problems than money. I mean, that talk about dysfunction. That organization is a classic dysfunctional organization. I'll be honest with you. I love Washington. Washington, $39 million cap space, great defense. I'm just, all they're missing in my mind, Cynthia, is a quarterback. Do you see a veteran quarterback making his way to Washington to solidify that team and making it whole?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, as much as I would like to put a Deshaun Watson there, I think that, or, you know, maybe them draft someone in this class, I think they're smart to be patient. I don't think they're in a hurry. I believe Ron Rivera at his presser, and sometimes I don't believe coaches at pressers this time of year because they all kind of fib to us, right? But I believe him when he says that they're not freaking out. I believe him when he says they're taking a calm approach and going to evaluate it the best way that they can. I believe him. I don't think that that's just kind of, you know, coach speak for us. So when I look to see that, Cam Newton makes a whole lot of sense for them in many ways, but so do a number of other people. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know what happens to Teddy Bridgewater if he's not going to be a Panther. I mean, today Matt Rhule said that he kind of made it seem like, oh, we're evaluating everything and he could still be, he's a great guy, blah, blah, blah. I think that was more coach speak, even though we love Matt Rhule, but like, I don't think they've made any decisions anywhere. No one wants to tell us what cards they have. So I believe Ron Rivera though, when he says we'll figure it out and we're not panicking.
Again, Cynthia Freeland, join us here on 98.7 ESPN. You can see her all over the NFL Network. Let's turn our attention to what's going on with the Jets in that division. In the Patriots, they trade for Trent Brown today to bolster, of course, their offensive line. They are sitting pretty. I think they're fourth in regard to cap space. But big question marks in regard to what are they going to do at the quarterback position? There's some talk and speculation with Jimmy Garoppolo. Who do you see quarterbacking the Patriots this coming season?
Interestingly enough, I think the Jimmy G stuff is, I think that has some legs, but I wouldn't be surprised if we're all kind of like scratching our head with like a Marcus Mariota out of left field, or, you know, a situation with a more veteran quarterback that if they don't have the guy that they like, if they can't figure it out, I think they've got a lot of guys that are, you know, I'm going to call them B, right? Like a B, not necessarily the A-plus situation, but like a nice strong B where they can win some games, rely on getting pieces from their defense, but COVID opt-out people, they get them back and they're going to bolster their O-line. Sure. And they got to figure out who they're going to throw the ball to. Their wide receiving core needs some help. Maybe they throw in a tight end. I think they're in better shape than we think, but it's going to be interesting to see who this B-plus quarterback is, what I think they're going to get. Not that they're not going to swing for the fences. It doesn't seem like they're going to swing for the fences with something huge, but you know, I've been wrong before. It wouldn't be the first time, but I think maybe kind of one of these guys who is really smart and a little bit more veteran and a little bit more maybe underutilized, maybe somewhere else that they could get the best out of.
You know, I still love the Bills in this division. But, you know, I know you and I have had several conversations on my weekend show where you've mentioned the potential of Deshaun Watson going to the Miami Dolphins. On a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel about that possibility right now, 10 being feeling really strong about it?
That it's going to happen, you mean? I mean, it's like a 6. I don't know. I think that the Texans truly believe that they can mend the defense there. I still think that they're listening to offers because they have to. And I guess it's something we're so ridiculous they might, but I think they can mend the fence. I don't think they're living in reality.
I mean, but everything we hear is that he will never wear another Texans jersey again. Like why are they so delusional? Do we know?
I know that's a great question. I mean, look, this is an ego-driven league, and these people, they haven't worked It's all a new regime. You know, there's only one kind of main person in the front office. It's a carryover, and it's a tricky situation. People think with a lot of money involved that can change things. But I mean, just the fact that J.J. Watt is no longer there is telling in and of itself.
Let's talk about the Jets. You know, I had David Cantor on my radio show this weekend, and he said, listen, you know, a team might have a ton of money in cap space, but unless an owner says, okay, spend it, and has the cash to spend it, it doesn't matter what their cap space is. The ownership has to be on board for the general manager to spend it. And he kind of alluded, I kind of feel that David kind of has his finger on the pulse of the Jets, and I kind of feel that he alluded that, you know, that maybe the Jets, even though they have the second most cap space in the NFL, won't be as aggressive with that cap space as other teams. He did say that he does feel that you know, Saleh and Joe D have a great plan in place. He just kind of alluded that maybe it just doesn't all to come together this year. How do you see the Jets approaching free agency, Cynthia?
How do I see them, or how do I want? See, I feel like this is an interesting situation because they're not one player away. So I don't know. I think that the smart teams will do something really interesting this season. And I think that is to create a long-term plan and a long-term strategy that gets rid of all their bad contracts. If you're in a position like the Jets where you have some rope, presumably with, you know, Joe Douglas got hired in an off cycle. It's not like he got hired at a weird time, right? And then, so it's kind of like his 1.5 year, I guess, but it's not quite the same. And then, and so Robert Saleh, of course, is new. So with the new regime and a new idea, you have a little bit longer leash. It would be smart. Just get rid of all the bad contracts. Get rid of all the situations that you don't want and try to just get to your vision quickly. I think this season, the Jets should be a little smarter because there's so many cap casualties that are good players that in other seasons would not have the opportunity to hit the market. John Brown being the one that happened today. I mean, that's a really nice contract he had for the Bills, not overly expensive, but they just couldn't afford him. That is 100% a fact that the 182.5 is lower than, you know, we all thought the cap would go up forever. Whoever thought it get cut down, right? So ultimately, right. That deal, those people aren't going to be on the market next season because you know what's going to happen? The cap's going to go back up, and then players will get paid more. That it's supply and demand. Right now, these teams like the Jets should go make a splash. You are not one player away. You do not have the luxury of saying, okay, we can pick and choose and just kind of pay this one guy or do this one thing. I think they should make a huge splash, and I think they should plan their contracts accordingly because you can write some really good deals right now because teams are strapped, and they don't all have the luxury of a lot of money.
Yeah, I call it the haves and the have-nots this year. And, you know, not that any of us anticipated, obviously, a pandemic happening, but, you know, and I call it like they just stepped in poop, right? Like they just got lucky. Like, you know, based on where their organization was and their game plan for the next 2 or 3 years, and they just stepped right in it. And they're like, wow, you know, we're in a better situation than most. You know, there's a lot of talk and in speculation as well that the Jets are going to draft Zach Wilson at 2. If you look around, the majority of mock drafts have the Jets taking Zach Wilson at 2. Are you hearing the same thing?
Yeah, I've heard a number of different things. I think that I feel like that might be a smoke and mirror tactic to be able to garner more equity. Because if they're going to let everyone know that they're going to take a quarterback, then a team who really wants a quarterback might be kind of forced to jump up and leapfrog and give them a great offer. And that's a smart way to play it, right? If I were Joe Douglas, I'd be like, we're taking a quarterback for sure, wink, wink. But then I would trade down. So I hear that, yes, and I understand it, but I also think that strategically speaking, to me, there's better deals to be had by keeping Sam Darnold and figuring out some of the other huge, massive, like pass rushing and cornerback and all these other problems to solve. I would trade down just a bit, get one of these top corners. This is a very light class when it comes to pass rushers and when it comes to defensive tackles. So any of those things that you need, you got to pick the right one. And then the corners, there's a few more corners, like premium corners in this draft than others, but there is no Chase Young in this draft. And it's much lighter on defense than it might seem on the offset at the defensive line, of defensive front.
You know you're old when it's Patrick Surtain Jr. and Asante Samuel Jr.
Right? Antoine you know, Jr. last year too, right?
You know you're old when. Last thing for you before we let you go, Cynthia Freeland, and that is Russell Wilson. Reports this week, the Seattle Seahawks sent out a video or some type of, a program to its season ticket holders, but no Russell Wilson mentioned at all or seen at all. Is this a sign of things to come? Do you anticipate Russell Wilson not being the Seattle Seahawks starting quarterback this season?
There's a different brand of petty that's going on this season, don't you think? Like first Teddy Bridgewater unfollows all of the Carolina Panthers social media. Then Russell Wilson, he's not on the cover because he said he could potentially go to these other teams. And that, it's just so, okay, we need to pull it in here. Let's be honest. I don't think that I'd be shocked if Russell Wilson were not in Seattle. I would truly be. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. But I would be shocked if that was the case.
Cynthia, always great having you on. Love talking football with you. And I know our listeners love hearing you on the station. And so please know how much we appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your week, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Again, Cynthia Freeland, you can see her all over the NFL Network. Without further ado, let's bring in my very dear friend, John Mascari, head pro at Alpine Country Club. Jonathan!
You always say it that certain way with that little bit of snootiness to it. It's not a snooty
place. Alpine, because I got yelled at, right? I was reprimanded because the first time we did our On the T show, I didn't say Country Club.
And you've hit it on the mark every time since, so good job. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm well. For the past 3 days, I've been able to go outside and actually exercise. So, I'm mentally and physically in peak shape right now. I will say that.
Yeah, another good day coming up tomorrow too. So enjoy it.
What's going on at Alpine, by the way? I mean, weather conditions have been amazing. Have people been out there golfing?
Yeah, we had a few people walking the golf course today. There's still patches of snow around, and we still have temporary greens, but they're itching to get out there. We're setting up the driving range right now. We're getting all the new stuff, all the new golf balls ready to go. We're going to open up next Friday, so just about a week from now.
It's exciting. It's an exciting time, and for folks out there, we're excited. Our golf shows is back. And we're excited about it. It's going to be new time, new day. It's going to be Sunday at 8 a.m. So we moved from Saturday at 7 to Sunday to 8 a.m. So we're stoked about that. Obviously Sunday at 8 a.m. leading into the final round of a lot of tournaments. So couldn't ask for more. And we're so appreciative, by the way, for Tim McCarthy and, of course, Ryan and John and the folks who run the shop for allowing us and giving us this platform. We so appreciate it. So we're excited about that. Not sure exactly when the show is going to tee off. It's either going to tee off the Saturday prior to the Masters week or maybe the Saturday before. But stay tuned for it. And obviously John Mascari and Christina Thompson are a big part of it. So we thank you. So first and foremost, why do many call the Players Championship, quote unquote, the fifth major? Why is that?
Well, I think it really started out with the purse. It was a big event, and it always drew a lot of the top players in the world. And, where it falls, it's, kind of in that, the old order of majors. It fell right after the fight with PGA, and now it's kind of leading things off in a good way. So, still a huge tournament. The stadium course also helps, always capacity crowds. And this year we'll have 20% there, but it'll feel like 100%, I'm sure. And it's going to be a fun weekend where I'm excited.
Oh, are you kidding me? I'm stoked. So I'm picking Morikawa to win for a number of reasons. First of all, I will say this. This is the most difficult tournament to select a winner. And I feel that when you gamble on golf, you win more when you predict who's going to finish in the top 5, top 10, top 20, top 30, top 40. I feel that you win more when you wager on matchups. Okay? So I don't typically, I'm typically forced to pick a winner. So that's why I'm just throwing this out there. So I'm playing Morikawa to win, and you can get that at 22-1. I'm playing him to finish in the top 5, top 10, and top 20. And all of those are plus money, by the way. So
yeah, fantastic. That's all of them.
I love Morikawa. And I think a big key here is his new grip when it comes to putting, this quote-unquote saw grip that Mark O'Mara has taught him. If you can kind of elaborate on that, John.
Okay, this will be a first. I'm going to talk about a putting grip over the radio. So what he does, and if you're a golfer, picture yourself holding your putter, he's going to take his bottom hand on the putter. So if I'm a right-handed player, it's my right hand. And normally the palm is kind of facing towards the hole. He's going to turn it so that his palm is facing on the ground. And he wedges the putter in between his thumb and his index finger, that little crease in your hand. And he uses that to kind of push the putter head through the ball. And Mark O'Mara obviously was a fantastic putter. But Morikawa just happened to be hanging out with him one day, and they were just fooling around with it. And boy, it seemed to work pretty well. And he's staying with it.
So, I mean, for me, that's a really big reason why I really like more. These are Bermuda. And if you can't explain, like, Morikawa is from the West Coast. So he's used to putting more on, and I never pronounce it properly, Puoa?
It's Poania. It's short for, you say Poa, but you're close, Anita. It's okay.
Right. Is it Poa? Okay. So, so West Coast, it's Poa. East Coast, it's Bermuda. Talk about
the
difference.
Typically in the South, yeah.
Right. Talk about the difference in regard to how somebody who's putting on that type of surface and how difficult it is.
Well, you know, a Poa green tends to be a little more grainy. It has some, you know, the grass will grow a different way towards the sun. It'll grow different directions. So it affects the break and affects the speed. Bermuda is a little more firmer. It's got a little sandier soil to it. The real challenge, believe it or not, with Bermuda is your short game. It's a lot different to chip off Bermuda grass than rye or from up here, bent grass. But listen, these guys are playing all over the world their entire careers. I don't think it will bother him that much, other than maybe getting a few practice rounds in beforehand, and he'll be ready to go.
So you know who I'm predicting to win. Who do you have winning, John?
I like Victor Hovland. He's going off at 25-1. He's got 4 top fives in his last 6 starts. He's 9th in average birdies, 10th in scoring average, but in my opinion, his 2 biggest strengths are he's 5th off the tee, and he's 35th in strokes gained on approach. And that's a really those are 2 key metrics. Stroke gains off the tee is very important, especially at Sawgrass. He's also improved his short game, which has always been his weakness, and he's long enough off the tee that he'll be hitting short and mid irons into the greens here. I think he's ready to win this week. His game is set up to thrive at Sawgrass, and I'm going to pick him the same way you picked Morikawa. Win, top 5, top 10, top 20. 25-1 to win.
One guy who I've been betting, and I call him my human ATM machine, and of course my producer today said, well, wait a minute, ATM means you're the last M means machine, so you're saying machine twice. I said, I guess I am. And that is Willie Zalatoris. In 2021, he's played in 12 tournaments. 8 of the 12, he's finished in the top 20, if not better, right? Like top 20, you're like, what do you mean? Like last week at Bay Hill, tied for 10th, right? Like the dude is just crushing it. He's amazing. I feel like...
the word machine.
He's making people money hand over fist, right?
He is a machine. He is so accurate off the tee. He's lethal with his irons, 10th in stroke gains on the approach. And this is a big show for him. You know, this is a big opportunity for him to show the world how legitimate he is, how he's one of the tour's best ball strikers, one of the new rising stars. And if he just gets the putter going, he will definitely be in contention this weekend. No doubt.
His weak link to you is his putter?
Yes. If you want to call it weak, I mean, it's not a weakness so much, but it just tends to be hot and cold. And if he could figure out and get it hot for this weekend, easy money, top 10.
I love the kid. Before I let you go, give me a sleeper heading into tomorrow. Who's your sleeper pick that you think is really going to kind of like wow the world?
Oh boy. Let's think. I love Scottie Scheffler. If you follow,
I know you love Scottie Scheffler every week. You love Scottie Scheffler.
He's been my guy. I think he's primed and ready to go. He's had some great finishes, 5th, 20th, and 7th. So I know if you can call him a sleeper, his name is kind of a sleeper, but I think he's just knocking on the door right now. It's just a matter of him kicking it down.
I like Neesmith, and for whatever reason, I get like he didn't make the cut at Bay Hill last week. Fine. But, like, in prepping for this tournament, his name kept on coming up in regard to, like, all the metrics that matter, right? Greens in regulation, strokes gained on approach, you name it. Like, so for me, it's Neesmith as well as Henley.
I'll throw Abraham Answer in there also. So we both
you know what?
Too.
You're right. I don't have a – I want to say, like – In the number of times, like first of all, he thrives on Pete Dye courses.
Answer and, does absolutely, yep.
Yo, hands down. And I want to say he's got like in 7 of the the times that he's teed up here at this course, 5 of the 7 he's finished in the top 20, and you could get him to finish in the top 40 at plus money. To me, that's that's taking candy from a baby.
But that's what we do is we just make people money.
That's what we do, John Mascari.
That's what we do, man.
We make people money. I adore you. Thank you, my friend. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure.
Again, we're really excited. On the tee, back in action this season here on 98.7 ESPN. Coming to you every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Let's talk about the Yankees for a second. And Jake, who's producing the show, is a huge Yankees fan. And I want to play this clip from Zach Britton because obviously the performance of Zach Britton is going to be really crucial to the success of the Yankees this coming season. And I don't know if we're notifying people, but, you know, he did have a battle with COVID-19. And it was a pretty difficult one for him. Let's listen in.
A long time ago, Scott Boras told me the best attribute of a player is durability, right? So being able to be out on the field, doesn't matter how much talent you have, but if you can't make it on the field, then you're not helping your team. So it's disappointing that I'm not going to be there to start the year. But like I said, this is the best way for me to get with the guys this season and pitch at a high level and make a big impact. You know, I'm still planning on making a good amount of appearances for the club and making a big impact.
So Zach Britton, again, he's lost 18 pounds with his battle with COVID. I guess his wife, Courtney, apparently they had their 4th child back in January. And he told the media that he contracted COVID at that point when he was in the hospital, quote unquote, "I think I got at the hospital when we're having our kid. So it was even worse. I was not expecting to get hit that hard by COVID. It wiped me out pretty good. It showed me how serious this can be, even for somebody that's healthy, and how that can impact you months after you're kind of over, you've kind of gotten over it. It's really, there's some rough symptoms." And again, I want to bring Jake in. Jake's a huge Yankee fan, and he's a producer here on 98.7 ESPN. I mean, Jake, as a Yankees fan, and hearing what you know, Britain has to say. How concerned are you? I mean, listen, at the end of the day, we know pitching is the key to success when it comes to Major League Baseball. And this is their ace. So how concerned are you in regard to Britain's battle with COVID-19?
Yeah, I'm definitely concerned because we saw the last few seasons that the Yankees constantly have been dealing with the injury bug. Some of their best players have gone on the injured list, and it's really affected the regular season. They're already starting the season off with Luis Severino on the IL from the Tommy John surgery last year. They already lost Clark Schmidt, who's one of their really good young pitchers, to an injury, and now Zach Britton, who, as you mentioned, is one of their best pitchers out of the bullpen. He's going to start the year on the IL, being sidelined for 3 to 4 months. He's supposed to undergo surgery to remove that bone spur in his left elbow on Monday, and hopefully if everything goes well, he feels confident that he'll be able to pitch in the second half of the season. But the season hasn't even started yet, and the Yankees again have been hit with that injury bug, so it's not great.
You know, I find it interesting, right? Like, you know, prior to the collegiate NFL season, the college football season starting in the NFL, you know, we kind of like, there's so much we don't know about this virus, right? And it's really interesting how it affects people in so many different ways. And they were anticipating and expecting for young healthy athletes who contracted COVID-19 to have residual effects in regard to how it would affect their lungs, right? Breathing capacity, lung capacity, all these things that they felt would affect. But the percentage of athletes that are experiencing the post-COVID symptoms that could inhibit their athletic success are a lot lower than what they anticipated. But there are a few select, right, that unfortunately their bodies have not been able to battle this virus in a successful way.
It's a great point by you, because I was going to say a lot of people think that COVID only affects older people, which I mean,
no.
Yeah, absolutely not. We mentioned Zach Britton lost the 18 pounds, and he said that he got wiped out for 10 days. But not just Zach Britton. Off the top of my head, Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics, he said that since he's come back with his battle with COVID, he can't really breathe. Freddie Freeman said that when he got it, he was fearful for his life. He said he prayed to God that he wouldn't be taken. And Eduardo Rodriguez of the Boston Red Sox, the pitcher, he missed all of last season because he was battling with it and now has these heart issues that are still not fixed. So it's not just the older people being affected. We're seeing young athletes who are in the prime health of their lives being affected by it badly as well.
And, you know, I talked about this before, and typically on my weekend shows, I have a very dear friend of mine, a doctor who works at the Columbia Hospital, who joins me on occasion just to kind of give us an update in regard to COVID-19. And, you know, he explained to us on one of my shows that there is a certain protein. So a few things. Number one, there is a certain protein that lives within a white blood cell that fights COVID. So A, there's only a few select of us who have this certain protein within our white blood cells. And B, there's only a few, even fewer select, that when we contract COVID-19, this select protein within our white blood cell is activated to fight COVID. So those who don't have this certain protein within their white blood cell are those that suffer the most. And those that might have this protein in our white blood cell, but it doesn't activate, also suffer. And then there's quite a few of us who have this protein within our white blood cell that just, like, the minute we contract COVID, it just goes on the defense And that's what really protects us from the virus. So it's an unbelievable situation. But of course, we only wish the best for Zach Britton. And, you know, not to diminish the severity of the fact that we are in a pandemic and it is COVID-19, but this is a sports talk radio show. And we are talking about Zach, and we are talking about his importance to the Yankees rotation and what all that means. And we only wish him good health and a speedy recovery to where hopefully eventually he'll feel, you know, like he's 100% in closure. Zach, Jake, I want to bring you back in. You know, how confident are you heading into the season in regard to the Yankees in making a really big push to win the World Series this year?
I mean, I'm really confident, but I'm also really confident every year. I think that they could have really made the World Series the last few seasons. And this window that we've been talking about since the end of 2017, it's not coming to an end, but sooner or later, Brian Cashman said, you know, we want to win multiple World Series, but first you got to win one. And right now I do feel confident that the Yankees are the best team in the American League, but if they do get to the World Series and they have to go against the Dodgers, I don't know. I think the Dodgers might be slightly better. The Padres made a lot of moves this offseason getting Yu Darvish.
I was just going to say, man, the Padres, dude, come on.
And even the Mets, I know people are going to call me crazy for that, but the Mets with the addition of Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco, I think they're going to be in the mix to win the National League too. So I think the Yankees are the best team in the American League, but depending on who their opponent is once they get to the World Series, if they do get to the World Series, it's not going to be easy. So we'll see. Well, I guess hopefully these injuries don't continue to pile up like they have the last few seasons. Guys like Judge and Stanton need to stay healthy, but if they can do that, I think the Yankees are in really good shape.
Just to bring you up to speed on some of the NBA news and notes and scores at the half, brace yourself. The Spurs up on Dallas 59-52.
Which is good for our Knicks. We mentioned that during the break.
Yes, you did.
Every time the Mavericks lose, the Knicks have their first round pick. So thank you, Kristaps Porzingis. We appreciate it.
Listen, I know folks might think I'm crazy, but like I put money down at +220 that Dallas does not make it to the postseason. And a lot of that is banking on KP not staying healthy. Like there's a reason why the Knicks traded KP.
Your lips to God's ears, Anita.
Right. And I believe that one of the reasons is because he just can't stay healthy. So we'll see what happens there. But again, the Spurs up on the Mavericks 59-52. And you've got Memphis about 5 minutes left in the third quarter. They are up on the Wizards 80-79. So this is a competitive outing. Westbrook, 16 points, 7 assists. Bradley Beal, 17 points, 3 assists. I'm sorry, 5 assists, 2 rebounds. But more importantly, because it's a bet that I made, is that you've got Morant, 13 points, 7 assists. So right now he's at 20. I've got over 32.5. How do you feel about that, Jake, right now? Over 32.5 combined points and assists. He's sitting at 30 with 4 minutes left in the third. I'm feeling pretty good about it.
You should
feel
good. Yeah, no, you should definitely feel good. And
I'm feeling good about it.
Yeah, you should definitely feel pretty good. No injuries, you know, no blowouts, and I think you can knock on wood.
And this is competitive. He's not going to be benched. I'm feeling good about it.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.